You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I'm joined once again by Jordan Bastian. We are not in the Progressive Field dining room or even in Progressive Field. We're on the phone. This is much less fun, JB.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm at the rental car center in Kansas City. I got old man Bastian sitting on a bench waiting for me. Terry Francona called me when I was sitting at gate 79 earlier and said switch is being activated. So I've had a productive morning.
That's a full day, man.
Yeah, you know, it's just all, you know, it's hashtag reporter life.
Are you, do you have your car? Do you have your rental car?
Not yet. I thought that I prioritized the podcast before getting the rental car. You know, I just want you to know how much you mean to me.
I appreciate that. Well, it's a lovely rental car facility there at
it is
at Kansas City International Airport. The only problem is you run out of gas driving to the airport. And you have to fill up around there. So, all right. Well, as you mentioned, Nick Swisher is joining the club on Tuesday. And, you know, I don't know if we expected to make this argument going into the year, but you can make the argument that they need him. They need that. They need some better lineup balance for sure. I guess the question is, can Swisher provide it? Obviously, coming off dual knee surgeries is no small thing. And he struggled against left-handed pitching last year, way more than is normal for him. So not that you saw him in Columbus or you know, have a great feel for where he's at right now from a performance standpoint, but what's your expectation for Swish as he rejoins the lineup now?
Well, offensively, I think he can help. You know, just talking to him in the clubhouse the other day, I mean, he looks still a lot thinner than he was last year. You know, you look at his AAA numbers just on the surface, and he was pretty productive. It was only six games, but he hit .375 with three extra base hits. I think the question really is going to be, how is Francona going to use him? I'm not sure there's full confidence that he's at 100% in terms of running. I think there's still maybe some issues in terms of deceleration and things like that. So what you'll probably see out of the gates is him used mostly as a designated hitter until, you know, the team's kind of fully confident that he can go out into the outfield and not hurt them defensively. So I think that's going to be what's going to be most interesting. Talking to Terry Francona today, he said he's still figuring out kind of where to fit him into the lineup. He's going over some different things. You know, maybe he'll be sixth or seventh to start out. I know in previous years when he was hitting well, he was in that number two spot, which is nice because he's a switch hitter and sees pitches and can get on base when he's healthy. So that'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how, you know, right now if he's kind of restricted to being a DH for the time being, you know, will he have to have some days off here and there, and how is Francona going to mix and match, you know, him into the lineup? So I think that's kind of what bears watching in terms of, you know, his immediate impact with this comeback.
It sounds like he really forced the issue. Like, I saw your tweet about this. He was adamant about his readiness to get back in action.
Yeah, I think the Indians' initial plan was probably to bring them back on Friday when they came back to start the homestand against the Twins. But really what Francona says is, you know, it was 3 days really going to make that big of a difference. And Swisher was really adamant that he was ready, that he was healthy, ready to help the team. And throughout this whole situation, you know, what Tito said is, you know, they've kind of wanted to do right by Nick. And if he's standing there in front of the GM, in front of the manager saying, hey, man, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to help, you know, then they give him that shot. You know, in 3 days, really, how much of a difference is that going to make? You know, I don't think all of a sudden he's going to be a burner on the base paths on Friday compared to what he's going to be Tuesday or Wednesday in Kansas City. So I think that kind of played into the decision as well. You know, no matter when he came back, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, you know, he was probably going to come back as a DH and be slowly worked back into the fold. And if he's, you know, adamant that he's ready, then I think they're just going to trust him on that and, you know, see what they have.
Well, what adds to the intrigue for me is they face two lefties in Kansas City, in Vargas and Duffy, and of course their left-handed struggles precede them. And I mentioned earlier, I mean, Swisher had a brutal year against lefties last year. Prior to that, I mean, his career, I'm just looking this up now while we do this. This is live baseball referencing going on here, JB. OPS, his career OPS against lefties is 829. That's pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. Last year,
yeah.
481. I mean,
that's
I can't do the math off the top of my head, but that seems like less. That seems like a much lower number than the first number.
Right.
So I'll be very curious to see if, on top of everything else with Swisher from a health standpoint, you know, what can he contribute against left-handed pitching, because that's obviously where they struggle quite a bit.
Yeah, and obviously Cleveland is a team that really relies on versatility, and you hate to see them be pigeonholed for too long with a pure DH, especially they're going to send Tyler Holt back down to AAA. So now their backup center fielder again is Mike Avilas. I mean, maybe under the circumstances, you know, maybe Brantley moves to center and maybe Michael Bourne sits against lefties or something. I mean, Tito's going to have to be kind of creative in making this work, especially when you have Murphy still on the roster. Rayburn is on the roster. Obviously, he's performing impressively well against left-handed pitching right now. So he's not really an issue, but in terms of the versatility of the lineup and where you can position guys, it maybe got a little more difficult right now, though, as we mentioned, perhaps the additional offense will be welcomed.
Well, this team needs some tough decisions in the lineup, and we talked last week about the decision Francona made a little over a week ago to move Jason Kipnis in the leadoff spot and Michael Bourne down to the number 9 hole. I'd say Kipnis, he's really come back to life in that leadoff spot. I don't know if one thing leads to the other or if he's just getting balls to fall now, but what's your read on what he's been able to accomplish there in the number 1 spot?
Well, I think we've seen it since spring training that he's looked more like his 2013 self, where he was going to the opposite field with authority, whether he was getting hits or getting outs. I mean, you saw him taking that similar approach that we just didn't see throughout last year. Early in the season, he wasn't getting the balls to fall, and I think sometimes that happens. And I think what we've seen now is a guy who maybe is now seeing some of the results of getting back to that approach. Although we did see a few years ago when Sinsu was really struggling, Manny had to put him in the leadoff spot, and it really got him going. And perhaps we're seeing that kind of result here. One thing that Francona brought up yesterday with Kipnis, Sunday with Kipnis, is he saw 9 pitches in his first at bat, and he rolled over and got an out. But just the fact that he saw 9 pitches really kind of laid a foundation for the rest of his game, and he ended up going 4 for 5. And I think within that game, you could kind of see that approach that I'm talking about, where when he got a pitch to pull, he pulled it for power and ends up hitting a home run. And then later in the game, he had a pitch that he could really shoot the other way, and he got a single to the left center gap, kind of right on the hole. So he's using the whole field. And I think going into the year, I liked him. I liked that idea of him as a leadoff hitter, just given his base ability again when he's healthy. He sees more pitches than Bourne, and really he's stealing more bases than Bourne. I mean, Bourne's speed hasn't been there. His on-base ability hasn't been there. So I think Terry Francona made that right decision to drop him to 8th and 9th in the lineup.
He nailed it. Now, looking at the rotation, Corey Kluber, of course, is always a focus, and his last 3 starts, an ERA over 7. And I think that, you made the point at the end of April, the numbers were very comparable to the end of last April, but then he goes out and has a stinker against the Blue Jays, and, it raises a red flag, because I think 2 starts is kind of, worrisome, and then 3 starts, now you're looking at a trend. So what are you seeing from Corey Kluber? What should the Corey Kluber panic meter be set at for the average Indians fan?
I think the panic meter should be reducing as we get closer to Yan Gomes coming back. And then, again, not to put the onus on Roberto Perez, but there's been an adjustment there. They're not as familiar with each other. And Gomes helped guide Kluber through a Cy Young season. So even talking to Kluber, he said there's been an adjustment. He cited pitch selection as an issue in his last few outings. And again, this isn't just a Roberto Perez issue, because he rates very high on pitch framing, game calling, all the things that you would want from your catcher. But Kluber's just not as familiar. And I think there's been a little bit of a learning curve, but just that adjustment of, Gomes was kind of his personal catcher. And, maybe the onus now kind of falls on Kluber a little bit to know in a situation that he can shake off a certain call if he's not comfortable going that way, just based on his history of facing certain batters. So That'll be interesting to see as we go along. I think they probably did a lot of work this week, worked together to kind of clean up some of those issues. But I'm not too concerned yet. I just think you look at the body of work last year over his career, I think Kluber will be fine. And again, even through six starts, if you look at it, it's pretty scary how close the numbers are from this year to last year. And again, maybe you don't expect a low 2 ERA from here through the rest of the season. It's hard to duplicate what he did last season, but you can find a little bit of hope in the fact that he had a very, very similar start to last year when he won the Cy Young.
To your point about pitch selection, here's another thing I'm looking up live while we record this. But yeah, his cutter usage, and this is something I noticed in April, he was definitely using the cutter more and the sinker less than last season. And then the start against the Blue Jays, it looks like his four-seamer usage spiked up. Although I don't know if I trust this, Brooks. I'm sorry to...
There's actually a discrepancy. If you're looking at Brooks baseball, there's a discrepancy. Some of his two seamers have been misread by PitchFX as four seamers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Because it was a pretty alarming drop in his two seamer usage, and that pitch was kind of key to unlocking his success over the last few years. So
exactly.
No, I mean he definitely has been throwing the cutter a lot more or a little bit more, but I think the fastball usage is pretty much in line with what he's been doing in the past.
See, things are so askew without Yan Gomes behind the plate that even Brooks baseball is thrown off. Nobody knows what's
happening
right there. But and Carlos Carrasco and Trevor Bauer, you know, they've had Bauer got beat around a little bit by the Twins on Sunday, and Carlos Carrasco, of course, ever since the getting struck in the face, he hasn't been quite as sharp. I don't think I don't think the panic meter is exactly all that high, but it does kind of point to that's kind of been the feel with this club. It's never really had everything clicking at one time. You know, they start to hit, and maybe the rotation's sagging a little bit, or the bullpen certainly had its issues, although the bullpen seems to have righted itself in the last few days. But, a lot of things have to be off kilter for a team to struggle to put together back-to-back wins the way the Indians have.
Yeah, and I think a signature moment, you hope you can look back on it as a signature moment, I guess, was Sunday after they were down big early against the Blue Jays, made some pretty bad mental decisions on defense and led to a six-run inning. And what we heard from both Bauer, from Kipnis, from Brantley, was some guys in the clubhouse and on the field really stepped up in terms of leadership. Which has kind of been a question going into this year. You know, Giambi's not there anymore. It's still a relatively young team. And again, not that a guy shouting and screaming in the dugout is going to all of a sudden turn a season around. You know, got to go out there and perform. But Bauer said some questions were answered during that game about who was going to step forward as the leaders of the team. You know, we have yet to really dive into the details of what happened. But we saw a pretty remarkable and improbable comeback by the Indians in that game, and you would hope maybe, you know, if we're getting into August and September, you know, maybe we can look back at Sunday and say that was a game that kind of, you know, served as a wake-up call for the team. I know that's certainly the hope of Indians fans and the hope for the Indians because, this has not been the start that fans of the team or Sports Illustrated expected.
Certainly not Sports Illustrated. And, yeah, to your point, I sound like Terry Francona there with the two-year point. And to his point, that was exactly what he said to these guys in the clubhouse during the midst of that Royals series, is my understanding, is nobody's stepping up, and that was the source of frustration for him. So maybe you're right. Maybe that's a galvanizing moment for them on Sunday, and maybe Nick Swisher can come in on his white horse to the rescue while Jordan Basham
takes
out his. What do you look for in a rental car? Who's your rental car? Who's your go-to rental car company?
Ever since we a couple years ago kind of started leaning a little more on Avis, I've been kind of an Avis guy.
Okay.
What I look for in a rental car is four wheels, steering wheel, and keys. That's usually my priorities there.
Well, see, I look for Sirius satellite radio.
You're looking for things that
are much more basic. But
yeah,
I'll take two wheels and Sirius over four wheels and terrestrial radio.
I found out in spring training, if you just ask for a Mustang, sometimes they give it to you. I said, they gave me a car, and I was like, oh, no Mustang, huh? And they go, oh, you want a Mustang? And then I got a Mustang for no additional rate. So apparently all you have to do is ask.
Look at Avis. Hey, what do we got to do to get some Avis sponsorship of this podcast?
I think we're doing our work right now. This is due diligence.
We can get some nice microphones and, whatever people use to record a podcast. Anyway, I want to thank Jordan Bastian for joining us as always, and thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians Edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.